I think we're at a very perilous time. No free republic in the history of civilization has lasted longer than 300 years, and that was the Roman Empire. We are 240 years old in our experiment in American democracy. We're still trying to get it right.
So are you buying into any of the end-timer talk? Are you buying into any of the apocalypse, the end of the world, here it all goes, we've lost our democracy, and any and all the rest? Have you bought into any of that talk? When looking around, and it really feels like we're living in a reality TV show, when you look around, it can seem like that stuff is real, like that stuff is legitimate, like here we go, this is it, you know, start storing water and food in your houses, because the old fat guy has killed it all, right? And it doesn't help when the Pentagon, which is generally at odds with the White House, they're independent, although they are completely dependent on not only Congress, but on the White House. That is the commander-in-chief that sits there at Pennsylvania Avenue. When they're at odds, it makes us wonder. So the Pentagon said a while ago, global warming is a thing. Global warming is real. Our scientists tell us that it is so, and that we need to start doing something about it now. And the Pentagon has begun planning for when the world starts running out of food and fresh water, and when it devolves into chaos because of global warming. But if you listen to President Dum Dum, he says it's not happening. Now, he's the commander-in-chief, but it doesn't matter. He's not a scientist. So what has the Pentagon said this week? Well, they say that the American empire is collapsing. Do you believe that? Is it true? What's their case? What are your thoughts? And let's get into this, ladies and gentlemen. The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 214. My name is Melvin, and I am so glad to be here. Let's get started.
Country's in trouble, economically and overseas. While the left will never admit that, it's true. And whoever the next president is going to inherit one big mess. The jihadists are threatening millions of people. Iran's close to having a nuclear weapon. Working Americans are still struggling to make money in the marketplace, and our traditional American values are under siege nearly everywhere. If you're a Christian or a white man in the USA, it's open season on you. Therefore, Hillary Clinton has an advantage.
That's the kind of thing we were hearing when it appeared that Hillary was next to become president. Oh my God, collapse of the world, here it goes, everything's falling down, this is it, you know, hug your wife, hug your children, kiss them on the faces and necks and all the rest and any place that makes them feel good. That's it, it's the end of the world, Hillary becomes president, dang gummit, it's a woman and it's a Democratic woman, that's the end of the world, we can't have a world. Oh wait, Trump became president? Cool. Yo, hey everybody, settle down, everything is cool. Because Trump is now president. So the world is collapsing. It's not really, but let me give you the Pentagon's case. So this is from Raw Story by Naveez Ahmed. Headline: Pentagon study declares that the American empire is collapsing. So what is their case? Quoting here, an extraordinary new Pentagon study has concluded the U.S.-backed framework of international order established after World War II is fraying and may even be collapsing, leading the United States to lose its position of primacy in world affairs. The document concludes that the world has entered a fundamentally new phase of transformation in which U.S. power is in decline. International order is unraveling, and the authority of governments everywhere is crumbling. Having lost its past status of preeminence, the U.S. now inhabits a dangerous, unpredictable post-primacy world whose defining feature is resistance to authority. Pause for a minute. Obviously, it's the Pentagon. They are authority, so they're not real hot on resistance to authority. And you can't turn your head one time right now without seeing two bumper stickers or posters or flags or any of the rest that say right on them, resist. Because we've gone from a governing strategy, a strategy where we pick people that are representative and pick people that are representatives of us, and we've moved into an era where you are either A, part of the problem, or B, part of the resistance. And that is an unfortunate statement. Quote, the report, based on a year-long intensive research process involving consultation with key agencies across the DOD, the Department of Defense, and U.S. Army, calls the U.S. government to invest in more surveillance, better propaganda through strategic manipulation of public opinion, and a wider and more flexible military. Now, hold up. So that is the DOD's answer. That's the Pentagon's answer. They need better strategic manipulation of public opinion through propaganda and more surveillance and a wider and more flexible military. I say this on the heels of the fact that the military just got another gigantic budget approved. Per the founders, the military budget has to be reauthorized every 2 years. It's not something that gets to just be in perpetuity. And the reason for that is the founders never wanted us to be perpetually at war. So what we do now, and it's a completely non-controversial thing because everybody, because the one thing we still make are weapons of war. And we make those weapons of war, and if I'm not mistaken, all 50 states, even Bernie Sanders, has voted for these things in the past. And because they are in all 50 states, that means all 50 states depend on the jobs that come from war. So these things pass, and they generally pass without a lot of hubbub. But here's the Pentagon pointing out to us, collapse is coming. Excuse me, Pentagon, DOD, defense contractors, mercenaries, American Empire. Is it possible, and I know I'm going out on a limb here, speaking out of turn, any and all the rest, but is it possible that perhaps because we have strayed from that original vision? I understand there were problems with the founders, because remember, these folks were slave owners, and there's no getting around that some of those slaves were not just made to live in human bondage, but they were also raped. There's no getting away from that, but there were some good ideas that came from the founders, and one of those though was that we cannot be in a perpetual state of warfare. I understand how profitable it is, and I understand if you're a Republican, you love it because you can kill lots of people. But if you're a regular person like me, if you have a heart beating in your chest, you don't want to see your fellow man suffer, and you don't want America to be this bloody empire. You don't like the way things are going. You don't want to have this stuff. If you're conservative, you're good with it because you're an authoritarian. You just lean towards this stuff. But for the rest of us, we don't. We don't like it. But is it possible, DOD? Is it possible, Pentagon? Is it possible that your perpetual state of warfare or a perpetual state of readiness where we've got these massive bombs and massive tanks and planes and guns and any others, do you think that perhaps that could be potentially leading? And I understand. Excuse me. Smack me if I'm wrong. Could that be leading us into collapse? America or the American Empire? Or what they refer to as our position of primacy. Could we be losing that because of our insistence on perpetual warfare? So the DOD has some ideas of how they're going to get us all back. So this report was published in June by the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute to evaluate the DOD's approach to risk assessment at all levels of Pentagon policy planning. A couple things. They say, while the United States remains a global political, economic, and military giant, it no longer enjoys an unassailable position versus the competitor, the report laments. Could that be? Because we have outsourced, with the exception of our murder weapons, we have outsourced all of our manufacturing, or almost all of our manufacturing. In brief, the status quo that was hatched and nurtured by U.S. strategists after World War II and has for decades been the principal beat for DOD is not merely fraying, but in fact, it may be, as they say, collapsing. The document says this should not be seen as defeatism, but rather a wake-up call. Now, hold on. DOD, you got a lot to do with this. You're making money on war, and you're slaughtering the whole lot of us. And you'd like to provide us with a wake-up call. Forgive my cynicism, because the wake-up call for me came when we began killing our brothers and sisters, not in the name of freedom, but in the name of profit and in the name of empire. And in the name of supremacy, not just American supremacy, but white supremacy and America's supremacy over the world, global supremacy. My wake-up call came then. The fact that you, the Department of Defense, are waking up now? Well, you're not waking up now. You're telling us that we need to wake up now because we could bugger off. Quote here, if nothing is done to adapt to this post-primacy environment, the complexity and speed of world events will increasingly defy the DOD's current strategy, planning, and risk assessments, conventions, and biases. They say that we need to defend the status quo. Top of the list of forces that have knocked the U.S. off of its position of global preeminence, says the report, are the role of competing powers, major rivals like Russia and China, and as well as smaller players like Iran and North Korea. Russia and China are described as revisionist forces who benefit from the U.S.-dominated international order, but who dare to seek new distribution of power and authority commensurate with their emergence as legitimate rivals to U.S. dominance. Russia and China, the analysts say, are engaged in a deliberate program to demonstrate the limits of U.S. authority, will reach influence and impact. This Russia thing that's going on right now, and we don't know what it really means. The president, Trump, is not being forthcoming with us. As a matter of fact, right now, Trump is trying to find a way to stop the Russia thing, stop the Russia investigation. Hey, if Russia is fake, and if you have done nothing wrong, then let it go forward. And after it proves you do nothing wrong, you get to say, aha, fake news, I was right all along. But instead, you're trying to kill it. So clearly, there's something there. We all like denying it, but there's clearly something there, but we don't know what it is. Because Putin's a liar, and President Trump is a liar. Losing the propaganda war. Quoting here, amidst the challenge posed by these competing powers, the Pentagon study emphasizes that the threat from non-state forces, which are undermining the U.S.-led order in different ways, primarily through information. Quote, the hyperconnectivity and weaponization of information, disinformation, and disaffection, the study team observes, is leading to the uncontrolled spread of information. The upshot is that the Pentagon faces the inevitable elimination of secrecy and operational scrutiny.
Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing. I think you will probably be rewarded mightily by our press.
It probably doesn't help that President Dum Dum is asking for help from the people who are supposedly the enemy. And by the way, yeah, the DOD, you're getting to a point where you don't get to operate in secrecy anymore. Perhaps those days should come to an end because you have not been doing a great job. As a matter of fact, you've kept us in a state of perpetual warfare. Now the DOD, and this is Rich, is warning us about civil unrest. Highlighting the threat posed by groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda. Let me pause here. ISIS and Al-Qaeda. So Al-Qaeda came from Osama bin Laden. I mean, he was sort of the head of it. And that came because we trained Osama bin Laden. Our CIA. Bin Laden worked for our CIA, got our training, and then decided to turn on the country that trained him. And we were using him to fight the Russians. That was our thing. Then he goes off and he starts Al-Qaeda. And then comes ISIS. Why? Where the hell did ISIS come from? ISIS are the ex-Baathists out of Iraq. What happened with Iraq? We decided to go in there, bombing, guns blazing, and slaughtering people. And we've occupied the country ever since. And now ISIS doesn't like us very much. And so what do we say? They hate us for our freedoms. They don't like us because we're so dang gum free. If these groups are part of that destabilization, it seems our perpetual state of warfare may or may not have put us there. The study also points to leaderless instability like the Arab Spring as a major driver of a generalized erosion of disillusion of traditional authority structures. The document hints that such populist civil unrest is likely to become prominent in Western homelands, including inside, you don't say, the United States. To date, U.S. strategists have been fixated on this trend in the greater Middle East. However, the same forces at work that are similarly eroding the reach and authority of governments worldwide, it would be unwise not to recognize that they will mutate, metastasize, and, here it is, manifest destiny over time. The Pentagon report also points to how we got here. And I'm going to read this whole section. It's not very long, so bear with me. Among the most dangerous drivers of this risk of civil unrest and mass destabilization, the document asserts, are different categories of fact. Apart from the obvious fact-free, which is defined as information that undermines objective truth, the other categories include actual truths that, however, are damaging to America's global reputation, which is to say, there are things out there floating around that are untrue that people believe, but then, of course, there are the things that are true that people should not know, even though they're true. This is why they need the whole propaganda part of it. Fact inconvenient information consists of the exposure of details that, by implication, undermine legitimate authority and erode the relationships between governments and the governed. In other words, facts that reveal how government policy is corrupt, incompetent, and undemocratic. Fact perilous. So we've got fact inconvenient and fact perilous. Fact perilous information refers to basically national security leaks from whistleblowers such as Edward Snowden and Chelsea Manning, exposing highly classified, sensitive, and proprietary information that can be used to accelerate a real loss of tactical, operational, or strategic advantage. And then there's fact toxic. Information that pertains to actual truths, which the document complains are exposed in the absence of context and therefore poison important political discourse. Such information is seen as being most potent in triggering outbreaks of civil unrest. Fatally weakens foundational security at an international, regional, national, or personal level. Indeed, fact toxic exposures are those likeliest to trigger viral or contagious insecurity across or within borders and between and among peoples. And then, of course, the answer for all of this from the Pentagon, and I'm just going to give you the two words, mass surveillance, and psychological warfare. That's their answer.
They're working together. Obama's working with them big time because, and he's not for the blacks. He's not. He's a pro.
Who's he really for?
Gays, because he's a homosexual. And look up Larry St. Clark. He said he's Obama's boyfriend. On the internet, they're trying.
Are you serious?
Larry St. Clark, Obama done killed four of his boyfriends. The mama was on TV crying. See,
Obama killed his boyfriend.
Yeah.
Why would he even be a homosexual? Why would he want
to
do that?
He always was gay. And look at his, a lady went to school with him, right? And she said Obama never did like girls. He paid women that like they like it.
So what did he really like?
He liked men, white men.
He paid women to act like they like him. For the ladies out there that are not conservative, obviously, but for the ladies out there, I think you'll agree with me. Barack Obama, not bad to look at. He doesn't have to pay anybody to act like they like him. I like him, but obviously in a non-nerdy way, I am spoken for. But that kind of nutty thing, right? You could turn on a camera and walk into any conservative crowd, and you would hear nutty things like that all day, every day. Larry St. Clair, Obama boyfriend, because, you know, he paid the ladies to like him. I make fun. But obviously, these people really believe that stuff. Where in the hell do they get this kind of information? The headline here from Alternet, how Breitbart's media disinformation created the paranoid, fact-averse nation that elected Trump. Now, obviously, the whole elected Trump thing, fine, we're going to be dealing with that for years, but we are still living in a paranoid, fact-averse nation. Dig this. It's a poll that came out today that said more than 50% of Trump voters believe that he won the popular vote. Yeah, Hillary Clinton won it by 2.8 something, blah, 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 just under 2.9 million votes in the popular vote. It doesn't matter because Trump says it and there's no proof of it and therefore they believe it. Quoting here, Breitbart's disruptive template fueled the political and information universe that we now inhabit, where the right dismisses facts and embraces fantasy. There's no corollary dynamic on the left or among pro-Clinton audiences in 2016. The left's news sources, media consumption, and patterns of social media sharing are more open-minded and fact-based and less singular and aggressive. These observations are among the takeaways of a major study from Columbia Journalism Review, CJR, that analyzed 1.25 million stories published online between April 2015 and Election Day 2016. While the study affirmed that many analysts have long perceived that right-wing media and those who consume it inhabit a paranoid and dark parallel universe, it also documented shifts in the right's media ecosystem, namely Breitbart supplanting Fox News as the leading purveyor of extreme disinformation. So that was the thing we'd all complain about in the past. It's Fox News. Fox News. Oh, I'm sorry. Is that true? Or did you hear it on Fox News? It's something that we said. Because nothing, damn near nothing that comes off of that channel is true. Now, when Bret Baier shows up and he goes, "Hi, my name is Bret Baier," that's where the truth begins and ends. Everything that's going to leave his mouth right after that is likely going to be an effing lie. But something happened in 2016. Fox is number one on cable TV. But as far as being number one with the racists, no, that's Breitbart now. I mean, they share a lot of the same audience, but the most racist, number one with racists now, is Breitbart. So here's the way it goes. The CJR report said that Americans' media consuming habits are asymmetric, meaning that those on the left, progressives and Democrats, rely on a more diverse outlet and content compared to the right. Pro-Clinton audiences were highly attentive to traditional media outlets, which continued to be the most prominent outlets across the public sphere, alongside more left-oriented online sites. But pro-Trump audiences paid the majority of their attention to polarized outlets that have developed recently, only after the 2008 election. The pro-Trump media specialized in what CJR called disinformation, where facts are presented in isolation, stripped of context, and then exaggerated or hyped to produce a false sense of alarm or crisis. This is a lot more sophisticated than merely lying, they said. Breitbart has been around for a long time, but they really gained a lot more prominence with the 2016 election. I remember they were really pushing the birther thing after Obama became elected. And Andrew Breitbart was the guy, the namesake. He was the guy that was running it at the time. And then he passed on. He walked into the light. I don't remember how he died. But when he did, then in comes Stephen Bannon. And it becomes the official site for the alt-right, which is nationalism, which is white supremacy. And so it doesn't take long in a country that polarized, that dislikes the fact that we have a black president that much before Breitbart becomes the news. So the most frequently shared sources among Trump supporters in descending order: Breitbart, The Hill, Fox News, Gateway Pundit, Politico, Washington Examiner, Daily Caller, CNN, Washington Post, New York Times, DonaldJTrump.com, Conservative Treehouse, InfoWars, Daily Mail, Truth Feed, New York Post, Investors, The Right Scoop, States Poll, and Conservative Tribune. The most frequently shared sources among Clinton supporters in descending order were The Washington Post, Huffington Post, New York Times, The Hill, CNN, Politico, Politicus USA, Daily Coast, Raw Story, HillaryClinton.com, MSNBC, Salon, Think Progress, Daily Newsbin, Mother Jones, Talking Points Memo, Daily Beast, Media Matters, NBC News, and Vox. Notably, there was virtually no middle ground. The most centrist news source, as measured by comparable volumes shared by both Trump and Clinton supporters, was the Wall Street Journal. They both pay attention to the Wall Street Journal pretty good. So then spring hit. And this is what we were looking at with respect to widely shared news sources between the two sides. When the finalists were Trump and Ted Cruz, CJR reported that the most shared news sources on the right were, in descending order, Breitbart, Fox News, Daily Caller, Gateway Pundit, Washington Examiner, WikiLeaks, and InfoWars. And on the left, the sources were CNN, The New York Times, Washington Post, Huffington Post, The Hill, and Politico. Now, you'll notice there were other sources that could be considered, you know, middle of the road or left, that all of those were sucked completely out of the right-wing universe. They decided, nope, absolutely not. If it's not going to tell me what I want to hear, then I'm not going to listen to it. And truth doesn't matter. What we find in our data, quoting here, is a network of mutually reinforcing hyperpartisan sites that revive what Richard Hofstadter called the paranoid style in American politics, combining decontextualized truths, repeated falsehoods, and leaps of logic to create a fundamentally misleading view of the world. And this is how we get things like our current tax policy.
You have put out a detailed tax plan, and let's drill down. You want three tax brackets, 10, 25, and 28%, a cap on tax deductions, except for charity at 2% of gross income, lower the top corporate rate from 35 to 20%, almost double the standard deduction. There are two major criticisms of your tax plan so far. First of all, the argument that, and you gave your tax plan to four conservative economists who said that it would increase the deficit between $1 and $3 trillion over the next 10 years. Now, Ronald Reagan proposed something roughly similar, big tax cuts back in 1980, and he argued that the dynamic effect, the word you used, would be that it would, the growth would end up paying for the revenue loss. You know what your dad called that. Is this your version of voodoo economics?
No.
So he was, that was Chris Wallace sitting down with Jeb Bush when we all believed that Jeb Bush was going to become the candidate. And what he was referring to there was George H.W. Bush, which called the economist that he's talking about voodoo economics. And it was seen as a gutsy move at that point. You'll remember that George H.W. Bush only served one term. Perhaps he wasn't willing to lie enough. Now, there was another word that was used inside that interview, and if you're not as politically astute, you may not have caught it. If you listen to this show, you may have caught it, though. The fact that he used the word dynamic scoring. So what is that? Dynamic scoring is where you take the conservative formula for what you say is going to happen based on your policies. It's like this. Dynamic scoring is made up. You throw out all of the history. We know what tax cuts do. They destabilize, they hurt the poor, they create wealth inequality. We know what tax cuts do. You know, tax cuts for the wealthy at least. But dynamic scoring throws all of that out. And tax cuts become the religion, and you believe in it just because they tell you to believe in it. Now, that wasn't the thing that lost Jeb the nomination. Jeb wasn't he was either he was unwilling or you know, he just couldn't act like an effing child. And Trump was more than willing to act like an effing child. Scream at the top of his lungs about how everything is wrong and the whole world is unfair to him and call people names, and the conservatives loved. They loved that.
So let's assess Donald Trump. I've interviewed him a number of times. Not an easy interview. How would you do it?
You know, Bill, you and I have talked about this general subject many times over the years. It's irrelevant how I would do it. And you know who made it irrelevant? You did. You have changed the television landscape over the past 20 years. You took it from being objective and dull to being subjective and entertaining. And in this current climate, it doesn't matter what the interviewer asks him. Mr. Trump is going to say whatever he wants to say, it, as outrageous as it may be.
It's a whole different ballgame on cable TV. Commentators like me have just ruined the country. I cop to that.
It's true, you
have. Right, I've ruined everything.
So that was Ted Koppel sitting down with Bill O'Reilly back when Bill O'Reilly had a show. And Ted Koppel was doing this for a while. See, Ted Koppel's an actual journalist. And he pointed out, he goes, it doesn't matter because you guys have ruined this whole thing. Journalism out the window. And then, of course, O'Reilly, yeah, sure, we ruined everything. But this wasn't the only time that Koppel pointed this out.
We have to give some credit to the American people that they're somewhat intelligent and that they know the difference between an opinion show and a news show.
Yeah.
You're cynical. Look at that.
Yeah, I'm cynical because, you know.
You think we're bad for America? You think I'm bad for America?
Yeah.
You do?
In in the long haul, I think you and all these opinion
That's
shows.
That's sad, Ted.
No, you know why?
That's sad.
Because you're very good at what you do, and because you have attracted a significantly more influential. Let me finish the sentence. Let me finish the sentence before you do that.
With all due respect.
You have attracted people who are determined that ideology is more important than fact.
Have determined that ideology is more important than fact. And yeah, and now we live in a completely fact-averse country. I want to highlight this a little bit further, and then I want to talk about what we can do about it. I just want to paint a more defined picture of exactly what this means, where we're at, how we got here, and how we're going to get the hell out of this. So the bill that's being considered in front of the Senate right now, it's gone through the House, it's gone through the Senate, we're on like the 10th version, I talked about it last week. What's being considered right now does one thing. It is a tax cut bill. And it does another thing that they also really like. It's going to kill. And I'm not, this isn't hyperbole. It's going to kill a lot of people. So they're talking about a skinny Obamacare repeal, which is where you just take out some of it. You don't kill the whole thing, but you kill a lot of it. And here's what they're looking for. They're not looking to make things better. They're not looking to help people. They're not looking to lower premiums. They're not looking to keep people healthy. None of that. No, Trump and the Republicans, they just need something that they can call a win. Anything. Anything. It doesn't freaking matter. If a bill was drawn up that made it legal to walk up to somebody on the street and stab them in the throat, as long as at the top of the bill it said that it was an Obamacare repeal, Trump would back it. It doesn't matter. Just pass something, anything. But it can't be something that helps people. It has to be something that hurts people. That's just what it is.
I've worked on these issues to expand access to care in a rural district.
So Greg, then tell me and about the $800 billion that's being taken out of Medicaid, when in fact all we had to do was leave the taxes that are here for very wealthy people. 400 people are receiving a substantial increase in their taxes.
I know.
They desperately don't need it. Do you not see how that affects Medicaid?
Okay. I'm going to try and bring the tone down here.
I'm not going to bring my tone down. Right. I'm mad as hell about what you all are doing, and I don't have to be nice to nobody when you're being nasty to poor people.
So the fiery gentleman that you hear in that clip, that's Alcee Hastings, and he's taking on Greg Walden. And of course, Greg Walden is backing this whole let's kill everybody bill. So I wanted to read you the latest PPP poll, and there's a couple of interesting things here that I need to point out. And the first and foremost is Trump voters. So you remember during the election, and I don't have the clip handy, forgive me, where Trump said, I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue, shoot somebody, and I wouldn't lose any voters. And so PPP said, I wonder if that is indeed the case. So here it is. And this is from Newsweek. It's a horrifying thought. Okay, just picture this. A man walks down Fifth Avenue in Manhattan, a bustling street full of New Yorkers and tourists alike, and fires at a random passerby. But in the eyes of many American voters, as long as the shooter was President Donald Trump, that'd be just fine. As long as that's what the findings indicate. At least that's what the findings indicate in a new poll released by PPP. The survey results hark back to the now infamous Trump claim that he made on the campaign trail last January, where he raised his hand like a gun and said he could shoot someone at Fifth Avenue and voters would still love him. He made the boast at an IRA rally. My people are so smart, he says. And you know what else they say about my people, the polls? They say, I have the most loyal people. Did you ever see that? Where I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and I wouldn't lose any voters. You're president, ladies and gentlemen. Public policy polling put the claim to test. And it mostly held up. 45% of Trump voters said they would approve of the president shooting somebody. Shooting a random person on Fifth Avenue. 29% of voters disapproved, and 26% somehow weren't sure if they were okay with him shooting somebody randomly in the middle of Fifth Avenue. This is the picture of the current GOP. Predictably, 90% of Hillary Clinton voters said that they disapproved of the president shooting someone, but perhaps surprisingly, 17% of those who voted for independent candidate Gary Johnson approved of Trump shooting someone. This also according to PPP. So 90% of Clinton voters said that they would not be okay with her shooting somebody randomly in the middle of the street. And I was talking to my wife about this, and she goes, who are the other 10%? The ones who would be okay with it if it was Donald Trump being shot? I was like, I had to point that out. I thought that was very clever. Obviously, here on The Fire You Can't Put Out, here's a disclaimer. We don't approve of the shooting of the president, ever, by any means. Whatever. So, PPP. The headline, healthcare is a minefield for Republicans. Now, it's true. They're up there gutting healthcare, and they want to kill a lot of people. They want to strip your healthcare away from you. They want to give tax cuts to millionaires and billionaires. And the resistance is working. I want to point this out. The resistance is working. Day one, we're going to get rid of Obamacare. Day one, right? And then 30 days later, or 29 days after that, because it was in the first 30 days, he was going to completely single-handedly defeat ISIS. This fat old man was going to defeat ISIS because, of course, that's completely believable. This is America. But day one, healthcare. Go and get rid of Obamacare on day one. We are almost into month 7 of his presidency, and he still has yet to get rid of Obamacare. So please, keep working out there. Because it is working. They can't get rid of the healthcare law that we've all come to depend on. The law that is saving tens of thousands of lives. So keep working. But let us not forget who we are up against. So many Trump voters are in denial about Russia. This is from an article over at PPP. Only 20% of voters support the healthcare bill that is being considered by Congress. To 50% who are opposed to it. Even among Republicans, there's a very narrow support for it. 35% in favor, 34% opposed. 31%, once again, not sure. They're also not sure if it's okay for the president to kill somebody in the middle of the street. Democrats, 10 and 72, and independents, 17 and 61. Each are strong. Okay, that's 10%. So Democrats, 10 and 72. And there were 10% of people who thought that it'd be okay if Hillary Clinton shot somebody in the street. I'm starting to think 10% of the Democratic Party is evil, but I digress. 53% of voters said they were less likely to vote for a member of Congress if they supported the healthcare bill that is currently being considered, to 21% who said they'd be more likely to support a member who voted yes. One thing that's particularly notable is the division, even within the Republican base on that front. Only 36% of GOP voters would be more likely to support a member of Congress if they voted for the health bill compared to 32% who would be less likely. The current political climate is already looking dicey for Republicans for the 2018 midterms. Democrats have a 50-40 lead in the generic ballot. Much gets made of Donald Trump's unpopularity, and certainly it's true that voters don't care for him. Only 41% approve of the job that he's doing, 55% who disapprove, but Trump comes out looking absolutely popular when it comes to Paul Ryan, 24 to 57%, and Mitch McConnell, 18 to 58%, and I don't know how they keep getting reelected. These numbers really don't change much for them, but they keep getting elected. It's amazing. Healthcare is turning a lot more Republican-leaning voters against their own party's leadership than Russia is, though. On Russia-related issues, we find a certain degree of willful ignorance among Trump voters that can possibly be summarized by this finding. Only 45% of Trump voters believe that Donald Trump Jr. had a meeting with the Russians about information that might be harmful to Hillary Clinton, even though Trump Jr. admitted it. Here it is. It's a fact. And it came from a Trump. And they say, nope, didn't happen. It's insane. All right, so the finding is in keeping with the general attitude of Trump voters toward the Russia story, which is don't know, don't care. 72% of Trump voters consider the Russia story overall fake news. Only 14% disagree. 24% of Trump voters even want an investigation into whether the Trump campaign colluded with Russia. 64% of Trump voters are opposed to the investigation. Even if there was an investigation and it found the Trump campaign did collude with Russia, 77% of his voters say that he should just stay in office. Only 26% of Trump voters admit that Russia wanted Trump to win the election. 44% claim Russia wanted Hillary to win the election, and 31% just aren't sure. Also, they're okay with shooting people in the middle of the street.
You don't gain friends, certainly, over exposing the Girl Scouts. It's an American icon. That's one reason why people aren't going to be all that impressed with you taking something of a stand against an organization that promotes lesbianism and abortion and contraception for 14-year-old girls. Now, we also took a stand against How to Train Your Dragon and Harry Potter for the homosexual mentors provided to little boys. And we felt that was sort of a bad deal, bringing back the Greek gymnasium vision. We didn't particularly like that.
Ladies and gentlemen, meet Kevin Swanson. This guy's a right-wing talk show host, and he is one of many that says wackadoodle things all the time. He's against Harry Potter. He's against How to Train Your Dragon. He's against the Girl Scouts because they're nothing but a bunch of lesbians. But it is this kind of talk that happens unchallenged every day that has left us exactly where we are with respect to our country that simply does not believe in facts that do not fit their preconceived notions all the time. This confirmation bias, this sociological condition where we, as human beings, seek out information that confirms what we already believe or think and ignore information that disputes our opinions. Because, honestly, it makes us more comfortable to find facts that agree with our already held opinions and theories. And it makes us uncomfortable. And I understand it makes me uncomfortable because I find things all the time that I don't like. I spend a lot of time reading. It makes us uncomfortable to discover information that might prove our theories wrong. But understand this. The path to truth is most often an uncomfortable one. And we must confront our own false narratives and myths. Or just turn on Rush Limbaugh.
New article in Politico magazine says Limbaugh's radio power may be waning. You know, almost no one's thought of this, but Limbaugh's contract is about to expire. Less than 2 months from now, actually. His current deal, a landmark 8-year commitment, was valued at $400 million. But times have changed since then. Here's what writer Ethan Epstein wrote for Politico magazine. He said, in recent years, Limbaugh has been dropped by several of his longtime affiliates, including some very powerful ones like WABC in New York, WRKO in Boston, and KFI in Los Angeles, for example. In many cases, Limbaugh's been moved on to smaller stations with weaker signals.
Quoting here from VOA News, many people who live in the United States are alarmingly ignorant of America's history and heritage, according to a new poll. The poll found, for example, that 10% of American college graduates incorrectly think that celebrity television judge Judith Sheindlin, who goes by the moniker Judge Judy, is a member of the U.S. Supreme Court. The poll, which was conducted in August of 2015, surveyed both college graduates and the general public and found that many were lacking some basic knowledge about the U.S. For example, only 20.6% of Americans were able to identify James Madison as the father of the Constitution, with more than 60% naming Thomas Jefferson, who was the primary author of the Declaration of Independence. College graduates only scored marginally better. Survey also found that roughly 60% of college graduates couldn't correctly name a requirement for the ratification of a constitutional amendment, and 40% didn't know that Congress has the constitutional authority to declare war. Presidents do not have that. It has to be Congress, because this is once again one of those founders things where they believed that it should go back to the people. Two senators for every state. And even those, there was a time where those were not democratically elected. They were picked by the governors of states. They were picked by the party, essentially. And then, of course, there's the House of Representatives. Starting a war costs money. All spending bills have to begin in the House of Representatives. So they say, hey, it's Congress's job. And if money is going to be appropriated, it'll start in the U.S. House of Representatives. That's the body that's closest to the people. That's why that particular body is elected every 2 years, where senators are on a 6-year term. They're from the states. In the House, that's the body closest to the people. So they say, hey, only Congress can declare war. But here's what we have now. The president says, I want war. And then as long as his party is in power, he's going to get his freaking war. Not even half, quoting again, not even half know that the Senate oversees presidential impeachments. It's a trial. It's an indictment and it's a trial. So I've said, if the subject of Trump getting impeached comes up, Trump will not sit through the trial. He will simply step out of office. He does not care. Those were not isolated findings, said the American Council of Trustees and Alumni, the ACTA, which conducted the survey in 2012. ACTA, and this survey was taken this year, the 2012 ACTA survey found that less than 20% of American college graduates could accurately identify the effect of the Emancipation Proclamation. Less than half could identify George Washington as the American general at Yorktown, and only 42% knew that the Battle of the Bulge occurred during World War II. ACTA found that in another survey that of over 1,100 liberal arts colleges and universities, only 18% require a course in American history and government. But even if more of them required that you take American history and government, there's always a right-wing tool out there writing a book about how America was really this illiberal, libertarian, hate paradise. And then they just bend, of course, it's called revisionist history, and then they just bend history. When surveys repeatedly show that American college graduates do not understand the fundamental processes of our government and the historical forces that shaped it, the problem is much greater than a simple lack of factual knowledge, says ACTA. It's a dangerous sign of civic disempowerment. Do I believe that America is in decline? I can make the case. It's true. I can make the case. But I can also make the case that we are not in decline. I've always hated the phrase waking up. As in when they say, well, people are waking up. People seem to be waking up. Americans are waking up. Folks finally seem to be waking up. My countrymen seem to be. I've always hated that because I hear it damn near every day. You know, certainly every week, definitely every month, and for freaking hell yeah, every single year. And I go, well, I understand. Now, when you're talking about actual waking up, as in you go to bed at night and you rise with the sun, of course, that is supposed to happen every day. But what you're talking about is the metaphorical waking up, as in people are starting to realize. And when you say they're waking up, it would seem that that is where they realize, yet they keep waking up without ever really waking up. But I think it's actually happening now. I think, I won't say waking up. I will say that Americans are finally becoming conscious, and it is good. The resistance movement, it's unfortunate that it has to happen, but it's good that it is happening. I see that there will be more civic engagement next time, and yes, we're not just fighting against an army of right-wing cranky billionaires. We're not just fighting against the liars that work and live in the White House and you know, Donald Trump and all these nutbags. It's not just them. It's their army of willfully ignorant morons as well. The ones who are fact-averse and paranoid. So it's another one of those things. It's not going to be an easy fight. But it is, however, a quite necessary fight. And I want to point something out. So the whole healthcare bill is going on right now, and we just passed a gigantic Pentagon bill. But the president did something insane in this last week, and nobody really understood why. He decided to tweet out that we can't have transgender people in the military anymore. A series of three tweets. He didn't have an official order. He didn't say anything to the Pentagon. Nobody freaking knew that it was going to happen because it was a three-part tweet, and it took the last tweet a long time to come out. There were generals in the Pentagon that were pretty sure the next thing that he was going to tweet out was that we're going to bomb North Korea because they didn't know. He didn't give them the heads up because, of course, he is so damn smart. A couple of things about this. It breaks my heart. It absolutely breaks my heart that this is happening. Most LGBT folks are progressive because they're good at being empathetic. They're good at thinking about how other people might feel. A lot of them have been oppressed throughout their whole lives, but there's a pretty significant number of LGBT people who are not progressive. And quite a few of them really turned out for Donald Trump in this most recent election. And Donald Trump was saying that he's going to be great on LGBT rights. And I've played it here on the show before. We don't have time now. Show's almost over. But he said he's going to be great on LGBT rights. But he said a lot of things that were absolute freaking lies, like about healthcare, defeating ISIS in 30 days. I could go on. Lot of things that turned out to not be true. And you should have known that even if he had to the LGBT community, you should have known that in his heart, even if he had it in his heart, that he gives a crap about the LGBT community. You had to know that he doesn't get to act that way because that's not where the Republican Party is at. So then there was this, Ivanka Trump. Ivanka Trump is progressive on this issue. So where the hell was she when daddy really, really needed one of those famous back rubs from his daughter while he was tweeting out this hate about transgender people? She was indirectly quoted as saying, we don't have a source on this, but it comes from a source that I trust. But they said that Ivanka felt like that this, at this point, that saying something about this or doing something about this would not be a good way to spend her political capital. Which is to say, there's other things that are more important than trans rights.
In Washington, the Justice Department released an important ruling that, for the first time, permits employers to fire AIDS victims in many cases. We begin now with NBC Law correspondent Carl Stern.
Conclusion on page 12. The Justice Department says federal law does not prohibit the firing of potentially millions of workers who may be carrying the AIDS virus. The opinion was reached by Assistant Attorney General Charles Cooper, who said carriers who might spread the disease are not handicapped workers whom the law protects.
There is a distinction between a handicap and the ability to communicate a disease.
6 months ago, the Public Health Service concluded that AIDS is not spread by casual contact. But the Justice Department ruling said conclusions of this character are too sweeping.
It certainly reinforces the false notion that AIDS can be spread casually and will give some employers the rationalization that they're looking for to discriminate, despite everything that scientists have said.
So that was the discussion that we were having back during the 80s. It's long been a point of discussion that we should get to discriminate against the LGBT community. And for a long time, the LGBT community was treated cruelly because not just the fact that they were gay and that was unacceptable and against God and all these other dumb things, but the fact that they thought that AIDS could be spread through casual contact. And so they said, we should be able to fire people based on the fact that they have AIDS. Think about that, how insane that is. So Trump tweets out his thing about transgender people. They shouldn't be able to serve in the military. Full stop. That's it. They're too expensive. All right? Forget about all the other things, that the insane things that the Pentagon spends money on. The transgender people are too damn expensive. Not to be outdone, the Justice Department then came out with a statement later that evening saying that they find nowhere in the laws of the Constitution or anything where it says that we shouldn't be able to discriminate against the LGBT community, that the LGBT community has no protections. And there's an old saying about they came for the communists. I was not a communist. I did not speak out. They came for the trade unionists. I did not speak out. Then they came for me. and there was nobody to speak for me. I'm tough on this particular subject. I bare my teeth when it comes to this particular subject. Not because I belong to the LGBT community, but because I understand that when one of us is oppressed, all of us are oppressed.
I would have thought in 2017, maybe I just hoped that in 2017, we would be done arguing about birth certificates, but obviously we're not. 17-year-old Mac Beggs, a junior at Eudes Trinity who was born a girl and is now in the process of becoming a boy, wins the girls' state wrestling tournament Saturday, so the argument has started again. Mac wanted to wrestle against the boys. The UIL says he had to wrestle the girls, and that's not fair for anybody involved in this argument. Mac has been taking testosterone, and it shows. There's a reason we have rules in sports against steroids, and it was an incredibly unfair advantage for him and unfair to the girls who had to wrestle him. But the answer to the question, when does a girl become a boy? When does a boy become a girl? When can you play games against those you identify with and not what a piece of paper says you are? That's way above my pay grade. But someone has to find a better answer than we're being given now. As I said when I wrote about Missouri football player Michael Sam, I'm not always comfortable when a man tells me he's gay. I don't understand his world, but I do understand he's a part of mine. And I am saying the same thing now about Mac Beggs. Transitioning is a struggle I cannot imagine. It is a journey I could not make, and it is a life that too many cannot live. The problems that Mac Beggs is facing and dealing with now remind me again that I don't have any problems. He needs our support, and he does not need a group of old men in Austin telling him who to wrestle because of a genetic mix-up at birth. We have argued long enough about birth certificates. It's an argument that needs to end. You don't have to understand. I don't understand. But Mac Beggs is not the problem so many people make him out to be. He's a child, simply looking for his place in the world and a chance to compete in the world. Do we really not have the simple decency to allow him at least that? Because it seems to me it's the very least we can do.
That's Dave Hansen, WFAA, out of Texas. I've played his clips on this show before, and that is really where I come down on this issue. It is not something that I fully understand, and I have friends who have transitioned. Yeah, and it's not something that I fully understand, but I, you know, as it goes, I don't understand their world, but I do understand that they are a part of mine. And the fact that there's a group of people arguing for discrimination against the LGBT community. And I take no joy in the fact that the LGBT community is being burned despite this gigantic support that they had for Trump during the election. It's not a time to point fingers and say, ha, 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 I was right, you should have listened to me, because that is childish, and that is most certainly not where I'm at. I will leave childish antics certainly up to the president. But I and you, I am in this fight, and you should be in this fight too. And it doesn't matter if you're gay or straight, or if you have somebody in your family that's trans or bi or any of these other things. It doesn't matter. When other people are oppressed, all people are oppressed. Yeah, I understand they are not you, and the president's not going after you because you're straight. And you're white, and you carry a Confederate flag, and you don't like black people. So the president's not going to come after you. But he is going after the good people. And it doesn't make you good just because you belong to one of these minorities. But everybody deserves a chance if you live in this country and you're following the rules. And it doesn't matter what your orientation is. It doesn't matter what gender you are or what gender you are now. Everybody deserves the same chance. Yeah, I'm talking equality. Yeah, I'm talking like a socialist wacko. I don't care. These are my people. And even though I don't know most of them personally, I will fight for all of them indefinitely. And you should be joining me. You should join me. Don't be afraid. Trust me, we're on the right side of history with respect to this. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on the Fiery Camp at our official home, TFYCPO.podbean.com. Like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/TFYCPO. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or at the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available for download at the iTunes Store. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out. There you can subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Keep us on Podbean. Questions, comments, hate mail, or just a general statement or inquiry, you can email us at tfycpo.gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us, and as always, thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity, rejecting dynamic scoring in favor of actual math. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and a special thanks to you for listening. This is Melvin signing off. Now that I've woken you up, good morning.